You're with Greg T. Ross, and welcome to another episode of the Last Post Radio Show podcast series. You can download at any time and listen to anywhere. Certainly a good way to keep up with what's going on in the veteran community and beyond. And today we've got someone who's been connected with the veteran community, or at least Australia's defence, action, etc., and also civilian life, mostly civilian life, a lady of great acclaim, Wendy Sharp, AM for Services to Arts and the Community. We welcome you to the Last Post Radio Show, Wendy. Hello.
Hi, Greg. So lovely to be here.
Thank you so much. It's a great thing to have you on here. You were Australia's war artist in East Timor. That was 1999. Is that correct?
Yes, it was 1999. So the commission was 1999. And I continued making work through to 2000, where I had my exhibition at the Australian War Memorial.
Fantastic. Well, we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But of course, very relevant with International Women's Day approaching on March 8th, and we look forward to celebrating that. Your exhibition coming up, I believe, in the UK, just correct me if I'm wrong, with Anita Taylor, Spellbound. Is that right? Or Spellbound's at the Art Gallery in New South Wales?
Nearly. Nearly right. I had an exhibition called Spellbound at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. And yes, I do have an exhibition coming up in March in the UK. And it's actually about women in mythology. So in a way, it does still have a bit of magic and spell.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And apologies for getting that confused. My notes are scrawled all over. That's fantastic.
Look, Greg, I always have a hell of a lot on. And, you know, things can be confusing because I'm always doing a whole lot of things at the same time, and a lot of them are not very related. So it can be confusing.
Yeah, thank you for the escape button. What, tell us a bit about the exhibition in the UK.
Well, this is, it's a really interesting idea in that it's, we each of us are making 8 large works on paper, choosing women from classical mythology and kind of retelling their stories visually. So they're not kind of cliched, you know, cutesy Venus or something, or Aphrodite as she is in Greek, etc. But they're actually, the reason why, I will say this, the reason why classical mythology is still around and anyone even bothers looking at it is because, even though they're ancient stories, they're stories about human nature. And they're also stories where almost a definition of, things that we don't believe is where good people live happily ever after and bad people are punished. Well, in classical mythology, sometimes good people doing nothing wrong, something awful happens to them. And it also has greed and jealousy and all of those foibles, which of course have existed wherever humans have existed.
And indeed, very relevant with International Women's Day on March 8th, but the good people surviving and the bad people being knocked down by fate is a great myth. We saw that last year with Donald Trump.
Yes. Oscar Wilde said the importance of being earnest, he said something to that effect, and he said that's what fiction is. And we know that because we like to think that there is justice and that the good triumph and good triumphs over evil, but not always, unfortunately.
No, true enough. What would happen to society, Wendy, if we expel that myth totally and failed to believe in good triumph?
That is true, and that actually is a very good segue into peacekeeping. It is.
Yeah.
Because when you were saying that, I was thinking about the role of peacekeepers is actually the role of good. And there's no question that it's good because it's stopping more violence.
Yeah. Well, talk about that in just a sec. Finally, I guess on the UK thing, when are you heading off to the UK?
I'm going via Thailand early next week. So I'm sort of flat out at the moment getting everything organized before I go. And I also am incredibly lucky to have an apartment in Paris where I'm going to spend some time too. So, you know, life is pretty good, I have to say. I have to keep reminding myself how lucky I am. Yeah. So I'm away till nearly the end of March.
Well, that's not a hard thing to do, to be over and have the exhibition in the UK and to be checked up there in Paris at the same time. That's quite a
No,
beautiful thing to be doing.
it's not sad. It's not sad, no.
Let's be totally honest. Spellbound at the Art Gallery in New South Wales. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, that was a had two that was a major exhibition, which was curated by Natalie Wilson, who worked for the Art Gallery of New South Wales and was fabulous to work with, in that I came up with a concept and she helped me to facilitate what I wanted to do. So one room was an unusual hang, things hung different heights, some things touching, breaking all sorts of things that they usually do in galleries. You know, you're not, these are sort of taboos, some of those things. So the whole of the room became like one work instead of each piece nicely spaced. And all of the walls were coloured. So you walked in and you felt like you were in one big artwork. And that was a massive show. And then in the next room, one of the things was a sort of recreation of part of my studio. So a bit of my studio was in there, and I've got a big warehouse studio in Sydney. And I was also painting a large mural every Friday in front of the public. So there was a lot going on.
Yeah, well, it was a pity that I wasn't one of those people in the public there, not coming along. That would have been an amazing thing to witness. And isn't it a beautiful thing about art too, Wendy, that the description you just gave there at the Art Gallery of New South Wales with your exhibition Spellbound, isn't it absolutely marvellous the way they can transport you and make you believe and all about perception, I suppose. Your perception of art is the important thing.
I think that's a really nice definition of what the arts do, the arts in general. Obviously, I'm a visual artist, so I'm thinking about painting. But yes, painting definitely. But you know, when you see a movie, you've just gone into another world. If you're reading a book, if you're listening to a story, music, it takes you somewhere else and it takes you into another world. And how wonderful is that? And it gets you to use your own imagination.
Yeah, well said too. I guess, Wendy, that's the important thing, and we'll never totally get on top of our imagination and the sense of what it can bring us and the amazing thing that it is. And talking about other
Yes.
countries earlier, we go to Paris and everything. Well, I suppose we go back to 1999, which we were discussing earlier, and your role in East Timor. You're attached to the Army History Unit, sketching locals and Australian peacekeepers, I do believe. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Wendy?
Yes, well, I'll just give a little background because it's something that people really obviously wouldn't know, I guess, which is you it's not something you apply for. An official artist. You can't put in an application. When I got a phone call from the War Memorial to ask if I wanted to go to East Timor and they talked about official artist scheme, I didn't actually know what they were talking about because it had kind of lapsed. It had been, it was in the Second World War. I think there was a bit in the Vietnam War, but it had kind of lapsed. And so I wasn't really familiar with it. But I also knew that it was such an honor because it's national, so they're just choosing someone. Would you like to go? And what they are choosing, and this is really the crux of it, I guess, is they're thinking, obviously they have to think that they value the artist's work and that it would be good in their collection, but they also need to think, what's the point of actually sending them over, particularly nowadays, when you can watch things online, on television, on whatever? Why would you go? You have to make work that is about being there. You know, and as we know, we were just talking about travel a minute ago, just nice touristy travel, whatever travel. You can look at pictures and online, but it's not the same as actually walking through it, you know, whatever it is, anything. It can be just going on holiday somewhere in Australia. It's not the same thing.
No.
And there needs to be someone who's going to synthesize the experience. The other thing that's really interesting and surprising in a way is that, and I can't remember how many, I've lost track now because I can't remember, but there are only a few countries that still have this scheme. I know the UK does, and I think Canada does. There may be others, I can't remember, but there's not very many. And a question is, why would you bother sending artists? Because Everyone over there's got a camera, they've got a phone, everyone's got, et cetera, et cetera. And the answer is they actually want an individual's response. Now, I know photography is still an individual's response. What do you choose to photograph? How do you, of course it is. But if you are doing visual art, even more so, I mean, you could even just do, I didn't, but you could actually do a whole lot of abstract paintings about how it felt. And every artist is there doing what they think kind of distills their experience.
How
And
amazing.
they're actually wanting that. Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, we're talking about art, visual art, but you could get a whole lot of writers, whether they're poets or whether they're people writing short stories, and they would all do talk about different things.
Well,
I
how
don't just mean
amazing.
reporters, because of course, reporters.
How amazing, Wendy, because actually it
Yeah,
just
no,
brings me up.
it's
I
nothing.
don't I'll let you go on, but I do remember when COVID lockdowns were in fashion during the peak of the pandemic, and the New South Wales or ABC or somebody, I took part in it. They had a diary forum where what they wanted you to do was just fill out your day and send it through to the ABC or the government or something. I can't remember now. And I just recently read one of my journals from that time. And of course, a lot of people were giving their accent and view to their day under COVID. So what you're saying is quite a brilliant thought, actually, poets, writers, painters, to give their descriptive of what they're going through.
Exactly. It is like that. But I mean, even on a light note, something light, if you and I and anyone listening or anyone, a whole group of us went to, I don't know, went to see a play or went to a restaurant together, say anything, went to the beach, and then we all had to talk about the experience, what struck you, we'd all say different things. We'd also, that waitress was a bit rude, thought the dessert was rubbery. Oh, I loved that thing. I loved the way they, et cetera, right? Like even something as banal as that, that's still, we all notice different things and we are all struck by different things. And when someone points that out, it brings it home to you. So that is what they do. And it's really fascinating because there's not really anything much else that I can think of that does that. So when they asked me, I obviously had to say yes. And I was sent over to originally to Darwin, first of all, where I was with the army that were waiting to go across there, and were being trained. We're sitting through lectures and things about East Timorese, and there was obviously things that I didn't need to do, but I was listening to some of the cultural things and some of the things, and I was assigned Cameron Simpson, who was attached to the Army History Unit as well, to as a sort of bodyguard, but also as a person to tell me what on earth was going on, because I didn't understand what's happening. And I wasn't wearing camouflage, of course, because I wasn't in the army, but I was wearing khaki. And so I had khaki and I had a flash on my shoulder, which I still have one of those shirts, which has Australian Official Artist written on it, which apparently is fantastic, which apparently is a reproduction, is the same as artists wore during the Second World War.
Oh, wonderful,
And I had that
wonderful.
on my shoulder. Yeah,
Yeah,
that was really fantastic.
you could have that framed and put it at the Art Gallery of New South Wales as a work of art in itself.
Well, you could, because it is so special. So it was to show it that I was referred to, of course, as a defence civilian. So I'm with the army, but I'm not actually one of them, which is why, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm really untidy. I don't have a gun, and I'm wearing lipstick. So, but anyway, I attended those things in Darwin, lectures and so on and so on, and then we went across on a double-hulled catamaran from Darwin to Dili, and that was an overnight crossing, quite rough. And there was they were Kaurna. I'm trying to think, where were they from? I think they were Kaurna. There was these other soldiers, because an international peacekeeping group, who were not used to being on the ocean, and they were all seasick. Because it was very rocky. I mean, it wasn't that rocky. It was quite rocky, but if you've never been on the ocean, it would be pretty rocky. So they were all sick. We were going across on this thing, and I've got drawings. I was drawing all the time. So I was drawing in Darwin. I was drawing what I saw, and what I saw is lecture theatres, just ordinary life, people sitting at computers, people having dinner or chatting or whatever they were doing. I was just drawing that. And then on this catamaran, I was drawing the same thing. I also have a drawing of myself climbing out from under some seats where I was sleeping that night, because that it's you're sleeping on the floor doing that. And when we, I'll tell you, when we arrived in Dili Harbour, I will never forget that. So you arrived there, and you could see quite clearly that it had been, was, and I'm hoping now again is a tropical paradise with beautiful palm trees in the distance. You can't quite see because you're in the port. Mountains, palm trees, and Portuguese church steeples. And it looks charming, you think. And then as soon as we got out of the port, as soon as we drove out, utter devastation. Everything was just smashed down to rubble. It was so shocking. I had been obviously looking for images before I left. And that was, I'm talking 1999, so it's just pre it much in the way of internet, like on the brink, but not quite. So I'm watching TV news, and of course I'm glued to that, and we're seeing footage of streets in Dili that have been destroyed. But the extent of it took my breath away. Driving through the streets, it's just it was like, it reminded me of Pompeii, I thought. It was like a volcano or something that just destroyed, which of course was the Malika. It was just rubble. And so shocking. And Dili, of course, had been a normal sort of modern town with supermarkets and whatever, cafes and banks and whatever, just an ordinary place, completely, that it could be anywhere in Australia, really, but was now just wiped.
And of course,
Shocking.
did you did you sketch anything, or did you have interaction with the militia at all, or did they keep you well clear of that?
No, I never saw that. I never saw them, but I saw, of course, I was talking all the time to the soldiers, obviously, and I'm also talking, I also did get to meet a lot of the East Timorese as well, the militia that they had. There was still, there was, it was still what I didn't understand, but I now have an understanding that even though it was sort of calm, it was calmish while I was there, they're still bubbling under the surface. And I now also understand that yes, it was calm, but it doesn't take very much at all for everything to break loose again. It's very fragile, of course. I mean, anyone who knows anything about that situation knows that, but I didn't.
Well, that was the feeling that well, at least I got. I think it was seemed it was very fragile, and fingers crossed that it all went to plan. But it must have been an amazing time to be over there. It was certainly an amazing time in Australia, East Timorese history. What was it like painting or sketching the locals?
Oh, look, great. Everyone was, everyone, they were really, I tell you, this was the thing. First of all, I'm thinking when I arrived, how do these Timorese feel about having the army there, the peacekeepers there? They were so pleased because they understood that they were there to stop any more violence. One day at Christmas Day, because I was there Christmas, I wasn't wearing my khaki, I was just wearing an old Indian skirt and a t-shirt. And they were looking at me thinking, who's she? Who's she? Because there was also NGOs there, various charities there, and they thought, okay, from some charity must be. Where from? What are you? They don't really understand. But even just khaki, they feel reassured. Oh, good, we understand who this is, and we know they're on our side. There is a very, very moving, there was a very, very moving whole lot of graffiti and writing in Swai or Suai, I never know how to pronounce it. I think Swai, which is a place down south in East Timor, where there'd been particularly high voting for independence from Indonesia. And then, of course, the militia came in and destroyed, burnt down everyone's house, killed so many people. Horrifying, absolutely horrifying things happened. And when the peacekeepers came in, there's this long wall, which, if anyone's interested in this, just look it up on the, you can go into the Australian War Memorial website, has images of all these things. There's this long wall that was around a market, just an ordinary rough white wall. And they've got bits of charcoal. Some of them would have been bits of charcoal from their burnt out houses. And they've written in huge writing, "Thank you, Australia. Thank you, military Australia. I love you." in military
Oh.
Australia, and drawings
Oh.
of Australian soldiers. And
Oh.
it's extra moving, so moving anyway. But these people, they have their own language, Tetum, and then their next language would be they've got Indonesians, they've got Portuguese. English is way down their list of all these languages. But they were writing all these thank you, thank you, thank you all over the wall. It's so moving, and it's obviously was a spontaneous act from the people.
Yeah. I guess it's what makes it important to be going into these foreign areas and being appreciated for the job you're doing. It reminds me of the French regional towns during World War One and Two who still give thanks to the
Ah,
Australians. For,
yes.
it's a beautiful
Yes.
story. Yeah. Yeah. And
Yes. I've been there, Villers Webner, and there's that there is that school that has Thank You
Victoria.
Australia, and they'll never forget.
Yeah, no, I heard about
And
that the
they
other
have a
day.
thing there. So
Yeah.
they do. Villers Webner up in northern France. And
Yeah.
in the school it says, never forget Australia.
That's right. That's right. How
So they're
beautiful. It must have
beautiful.
been, good to be over there, not because of the conflict, but at least to know that your presence was being appreciated. And the peacekeepers
Yes.
themselves, Wendy, what were they like?
Oh, look, honestly, I can honestly say this, and I wouldn't say this if it wasn't true, right? So I didn't even like school, and I went to a very relaxed kind of school. I can't stand anything which is kind of too
Rigid.
prescriptive, if you like. So I can't understand why anyone would join the army. So I kept asking people because I was interested why. And I asked men and women, all ages, why did you? And after a while, I stopped asking them because they all told me, without knowing, they all told me a very similar story, which was they were all a bit embarrassed, and they all said, I didn't want to do anything boring. I thought I wanted to do something that was more adventurous. But the big crux was very idealistic. I actually wanted to do something good, and I wanted to help people. I wanted to, it was really noble. That was what they all said. But they're all a bit
Wow.
embarrassed to say that. And
Wow.
they did say that, and peacekeeping enabled them to do that because they knew they were protecting innocent people. There was no question that they were, there was their job, of course, was to stop more violence. One was telling me how the East Timorese had caught someone that had been in the militia. They had them tied up, and they were throwing rocks at them or doing something like that. I never saw this, but I heard this. Trying to kill them, and because they probably, this might have been the person who killed one of their family or something, who knows, something awful. Anyway, they were trying to kill them, and Australian army came in and stopped them. And the East Timorese said, "Well, whose side are you on?" And they were saying, "We're going to take this person to trial. Well, this is not what we're going. You will have your time, but this is not how you do it. It's But I also saw, Greg, I tell you honestly, I really saw so much kindness above and beyond the call of duty with the soldiers. And again, I would never say this if it wasn't
No,
true.
it's not a PR exercise. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. No, it is totally not. I would never say that. I'd be happy to say if there was something negative, I would definitely speak out.
Well, I know you well enough to
Nothing
know that's
negative.
true.
So they were so things like, there were so many examples, but I'll just give you one little. There was people that were collecting books for the schools back in Australia that lost everything. This was all off their own bat, nothing to do with being in the army. It's just a human to human. Cameron Simpson, who was the soldier who was the bodyguard for me, he had got to know a fisherman who had in East Timorese fisherman who had virtually nothing, right? So he was in this little grass hut. He had a few plastic bowls, a fishing rod, and almost nothing. He was just barely eking out a living with his family. All that was destroyed. They destroyed his fishing equipment. They destroyed his house. He now has nothing. So Cameron apparently told his father about this, and the local Lions Club, I think on the Central Coast, but doesn't matter, somewhere in Australia,
Yeah.
got together and got this man fishing equipment and all of that stuff to send over. I
Wow.
mean, there's lots of stories like that, lots,
How
lots,
beautiful.
lots, lots of, and I'm sure you, but there's lots, and that's a little one, There's also big ones, like I did go around schools where they were delivering books that they'd collected for, but that was just a little personal one. I don't know if he wants me to say that story, but it's a little personal one of human to human, seeing, look what's happened to this poor person who did nothing wrong. Let's try and help. And so I thought, I saw refugees in Dili returning from having run off, being chased by the militia, and obviously in fear of their lives, into the hills, coming back. And I've got drawings of, and I saw Australian soldiers helping elderly people in and trying to reassure them everything was all. It was just beautiful. And it was something that I realized how important peacekeeping is. I had no idea. And I mean, I've got nothing to do. I had never had anything to do with anything military, so I didn't know. But I do know that it made a huge difference. There are people alive now who wouldn't be.
Yeah, that's always a
That's the point.
always a
And even their
yeah.
children.
That's always a great thing. That's always an amazing thing. And what an experience. I tell you what, and it's good to hear those stories of, I think even the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong respected the Australian soldiers a lot more than they respected the, well, they didn't respect the Americans much at all actually during the war, but they respected the Australians. So that's interesting. And I guess as an artist's role is, Wendy, to reflect, to give honest reflection, or at least as perceived by the artist, good and bad. That's the duty, I guess, in life too. But it's interesting that you see all these good things, and it must do something for your spirit.
Well, it did. People often say to me, and a question I often get asked is, did it change the way you work, or did it change you? It did. It didn't. My job was to make work. I'll tell you, first of all, before I went, I was thinking, I was before I went, I imagined I was going to do some huge painting, huge major painting, like Picasso's Guernica, one huge whacking painting, which summed up the whole shebang. And then I realized, I don't know enough about it. I can't do that. I can't. So what I did was I just literally drew from morning to night. I really did draw. There's 500 drawings. I'm drawing all the time. So even while I'm having breakfast or doing anything, I'm drawing. And I'm just drawing my experience. But I also did draw, as we were just saying, some of these really moving things. But the thing is that when people say, did this change you? What did this? What it highlighted for me, and I think that anyone, obviously with military experience, but also any kind of crisis experience, which would be bushfires or anything where there's a disaster, anything really extreme, brings out the best and the worst, and it made me more conscious of that. And I know of stories of during all these terrible massacres and destruction of buildings and shocking and unspeakable atrocities that happened to the East Timorese. Stories of unbelievable cruelty of what happened to them. You can't imagine any human could do that to another human. And then you also see there's also stories of incredible bravery and heroism and kindness. It's both. And that is what we know this. We know this, but it really highlights that human beings can be like that. And that is really in any extreme situation, you see both of those things.
Yeah, that's wonderfully said, Wendy. And it's a macro view of life in general. And of course, as you say, with warfare and destruction and floods and fire, yeah,
Yes,
it's
all
it,
of that. People who risk their life with someone who they don't know, or I know there's not many people like that, but the few people who go and say, okay, well, this terrible natural disaster is happening, I'm going to rob them. I mean, there's not many, but that does happen. So it's kind of both.
Yeah, no, it's the heaven and hell syndrome which exists, and I suppose it exists in individuals themselves too, Wendy. But look, I really feel that we've got a lot more to talk about, but I think perhaps we'll do this in a series. And when you get back from Paris, you can tell us all about the exhibition, because we'd love to hear about it, because you've really got so much going on.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can also, I mean, it was a few years ago, I know now, but I also can tell you about how this was a few years ago. I went with a group of artists around the Western Front, World War I, Northern France, and Belgium. And That was, and as we were just talking about, for example, that school with Thank You Australia or Never Forget Australia, it's really interesting what's left and also how you memorialize something, you know, for which of course the Australian War Memorial. How do you tell the story of what happened?
Well said, and I think we can discuss that. And I guess we're lucky to have you because you memorialise life itself, and your observations is beautifully illustrated during your time in East Timor. And you've got so much more going on. Of course, the Art Gallery New South Wales Spellbound, which was great, and of course the exhibition coming up in the UK with Anita Taylor, I believe. But yeah, Wendy Sharp, I tell you what, when we get back, or when you get back, I'm not going. When you get back, when you get back, let us know all about what happened, and we can line up another chat for the radio
Great.
show.
Okay, Greg, lovely to talk to you.
It's been fantastic. Wendy Sharp, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Listening to Greg T. Ross and the Last Post Radio Show on Captivate, Apple, and Spotify.